Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Not a doctor.
Bye, have a beautiful
frumula.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive and break down a season of television each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Leary.
And today we'll be discussing Succession Season 3. Damask Leary, how are you doing this fine morning?
Good. I really put a lot of concentration into saying my name normally because you know, but the people at home may know, is that I've had about 4 hours sleep. I feel like shit. I've had such like a hectic work week. I finished writing my spoiler-free review about 2 seconds ago on, you know, said 4 hours sleep. Look, I'm in Struggle Street over here. It's going to be a really interesting podcast, but I think it'll be fun. I'm feeling a little crazy, which I feel like fits, you know, the Logan family. So
that'll be fine. Yeah this asshole has made you get up early in West Australia after working
all evening. It's 7 a.m.
To put it, I will say though, I was listening back to our Succession Season 1, Season 2 reviews. And Succession Season 1, I think it was, I'd literally just watched the finale when we started recording, like 15 minutes earlier.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know, we can do this. We've done this. That was
You're
fine.
A little better at processing your, like, thoughts than I am.
Okay.
So, but, yeah, it'll be fun.
Before we get to our review, though, I, of course, want to mention the fact that we were scheduled to review The Great Season 2. And then, once again, this asshole decided, actually, can we talk about Succession Season 3 first? Which I'm kind of glad we're doing because spoilers are coming out thick and fast for this. And I don't just mean from people talking about it. Like, tell you what, if you're interested in seeing the new Spider-Man film, stay the fuck off being on the internet if you can. Like for the next, I don't know, 7 to 8 weeks, I think, because it's just, it's all coming out there. But even like HBO are now like spoiling major moments, basically. Which is very, very frustrating. So I want to talk about this now. I know The Great's been done and dusted for a while, but it's not getting talked about as much. We should get The Great Season 2 done before the end of the year, but we'll see how we're going as well. It's kind of a hectic end of the year at the moment.
Yeah, everything every week keeps filling up or something else pops up. I'm like, oh, should we do that? So yeah, we'll figure it out as we go along.
Well, see how we go. But apologies for those who are expecting The Great Season 2. We will get to it as soon as we can, basically. But right now, let's get to our spoiler-free review of Succession Season 3.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
Succession Season 3 drops us back into the fray mere hours, maybe minutes, after the bombshell finale of Season 2. Is Logan Roy's empire on the verge of collapse, or is this just another day at the office for the corporate titan? The highly acclaimed cast and creative team all return for this third go-around, with notable new faces Dasha Nekrasova, Zoe Winters, Adrian Brody, and Alexander Skarsgård, among others. Succession Season 3 consists of 9 episodes, which is one fewer than previous seasons, each coming in at around 58 minutes and took us approximately 8 hours and 40 minutes to watch. In October of 2021, Succession was renewed for a fourth and possibly but not confirmed final season. Damask, before we get to our spoiler-free reviews, can you remind the listeners what you thought of seasons 1 and 2 of Succession, please?
Sure. Can you remind me first? No, I'm joking. I mean, I'm kind of not. Look, I remember that I loved it.
The main takeaway, I think, yes.
Yeah, I can speak a little bit about the show's track record at the end of my spoiler-free review.
Sure.
But yeah, I really put off watching this show for a while. I was like, oh, it looks very, I don't know, serious and like mean, and I don't know if it's really my vibe at all. But then I just kept hearing from, you know, people that I respected, you know, whose opinions I respected. They were really kind of, you know, vying for this show and really recommending that a lot of people watch it. So I was like, all right, fine, I'll do it if I have to. It's not like I've got better things to do than watch 15 million hours of television a week. Spoilers, I don't. So I watched it, and season one blew my mind. It really lived up to the hype, and sometimes that's really rare. Like, we had that experience. Well, I had that experience with Squid Game. I had so much hype, and I watched it. I was like, it's fine, but, you know, it didn't blow me away. But this really did. And then season two really continued to do that in similar but also kind of different ways. So yeah, I'm a big fan of this show. I, you know, have taken up the campaign for this show as well, though I don't think I really need to anymore. I think most of the people I know have succumbed and watched it. Yeah, I love it. I can't speak highly enough of the show.
You gave both season one and two 5 stars. I was in a similar position to you where I had heard good things about it. I think the comparison I kept hearing was this is like corporate America's Game of Thrones. And I was like, oh, that sounds kind of cool, I guess, but I don't know if I'm in the vibe for that sort of show. And it wasn't until we decided to review it. And then I realized one episode in, I was like, oh, this is a comedy as much as it is a drama. And that has been the selling point that I keep coming back to. My brother Liam started watching the show from the beginning just as season three was starting. And it wasn't until I finally was like, yeah, it's really funny. He was like, oh, now I'm interested. Because rather than think it's going to be some dour, dry corporate drama, you realize you're going to have a fun time watching it, and it gets a lot easier to like get you just to watch that first ep. He's since caught up and was watching week by week towards the end of season three. So he was having a good time with it as well. And yeah, I love season one. I love season two. I was just ever so slightly less hot on them than you. I gave them both 4.5. Much like I've done a few times in the past, I'm hesitant to give fives. I've been a prick about that recently. And I keep going back to the, like, if it's masterful that we're going for, I need to like feel it in my soul that I love this show for it to be a 5, basically.
Which is shocking that you haven't felt it. That's fair. That's your perspective. Yeah.
And there was so much to praise about the show and talking about it, so much fun. I really enjoyed it and recommend it to everybody. But it hadn't hit me at that level. With that in mind, Damask, who should go first with their review of Succession Season 3? Would you like me to go first?
It's a dilemma, isn't it? Because I could go first, but then I'm also scared that I'm like, do I have anything to say this early in the morning? But then if I go after you, you probably have a fabulous review. And you know what? You just go first while I process.
I'll put it this way. Like with the last couple of Succession reviews, I actually haven't written like out a big like dialogue. It's all dot points.
Well, you say that, but then I remember the last time Liam was on and he told me that while you sound like you're off the cuff, you've literally written everything down that you say. So I don't know.
Well, it's not off the cuff, but it's dot points. It's not an essay. We'll put it that way, at least today.
Okay.
All right, I'll go first. First of all, I was interested to see how I went watching this show week to week rather than binging it, because the first two seasons, which we only watched this year, by the way, it was just before you left Melbourne. Well, you'd watched it before that, but it was my first time watching it. We binged that in a week, basically, per season. This, I thought, was a joy to watch week to week. I had a really good time with it. It's the sort of show where you marinate with it for a week, you talk to other people who are watching the show about it, and it's a really good time doing that. So that was definitely not a mistake. If anything, it might have enhanced the show, actually. My question is, where is the weakness of this show? Who or what is the weak link? Because it's not the writing. It's surprising, unpredictable, but satisfying the whole way through this season, just as it was previous seasons. Apparently, there was some criticism going around that season three wasn't going anywhere.
Pay attention, people. That's all I got to say to that.
Which I think might be because people expected a certain thing or certain storylines to occur or certain fireworks to happen this season because of how season two ended. Which I understand, expectations can be, you know, a cruel mistress sometimes. But the problem was, I never felt that way for a second. And by the time we got to the finale, I was completely rewarded for trusting these writers. Mm-hmm. It is immaculately structured and written. And if anyone felt like it was lost somewhere along the way, by the time they got to the finale, I have to assume they looked back and went, oh, I see what they were doing there. And shame on you for not having trust is my thought.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think I have expectations other than I assume it's going to be good because I know that these writers are so much smarter than me.
Yes.
Like, I just feel privileged to be able to, like, watch their story. So, I'm like, take me where you will, please. Yeah.
I think if I have any expectations now this show has given me, it's an unrealistic expectation of how good its finales will be. Mm-hmm. But it's 3 for fucking 3.
Yeah.
Is basically what I'm going to say. Also, one of the things I said about season two, I thought season one was laugh out loud funny a lot of the time, and season two got a little bit darker, and it wasn't that it wasn't funny, it maybe lost a little bit of its humor. I found myself laughing heaps again this season. I thought season three was really funny, particularly Tom and Greg stuff was as good as it's ever been this season.
Yeah, great stuff.
Really, really loved it. The weakness in this show is definitely not the performances. It's been an interesting week or two now for Jeremy Strong, who plays Kendall. We've talked a lot about him in the past reviews that we didn't really know him. We thought he was quite a revelation. We thought he was extremely good as Kendall. And so this article comes out in The New Yorker, and there's just all this discussion about him as sort of a method actor and whatever that means. And there's this, people have felt like they've, like Jessica Chastain and Aaron Sorkin have felt like they have to come out and defend him and all this sort of stuff.
Oh my God. It's so dramatic.
It's been a little bit extreme. I don't think anyone was really going off, or anyone was, it was in bad faith coming out to cancel Jeremy Strong. It sounds like maybe he's a bit annoying to work with at times. But, and if anything, if he's hurting anyone, maybe he's hurting himself a little bit, but you can't argue with the fucking results. This guy is a powerhouse in the show.
Yeah, that's why I haven't read it, because I was like, I'm just really enjoying the performance. I don't really need to know anything about the actor. Like, I think maybe eventually I'll read the article, because it sounds actually quite interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah. It is worth a read for that.
Yeah, and from what I can tell from a lot of people that I know that have read it, it isn't actually a hit piece, and I think those that think it is might be a little too self-serious and humorless, perhaps. There's nothing wrong with an insightful, what's the word?
It's not pulling punches. It's like, but it's also not going out of its way to make Jeremy Strong's name mud, I don't think. But, you know, the internet is not a subtle place anymore. It's either the best or it's the worst.
There's no nuance on the
internet. It's either the best or the worst. And I think if it does anything, there's any criticism of the article, I think, is it probably leans into, like, the stories about that time Jeremy Strong did something weird or was a bit of a pain in the ass. And because those have flavor, they get sort of elevated in the piece a little bit, or maybe that's just also how people have taken those elements out of that article and put them online, so that's what the bits that get highlighted.
You know what I think? I think, like, you know, in the future, because I think this show is going to have legs for a long, long time, and the people in it are going to be known as, like, really amazing actors. This is going to be, like, a show that, you know, people watch for many years to come, and then perhaps our kids will watch it and be like, you know, this is, like, a really amazing show. They'll watch it, and this article will become, like, part of the lore and just be a really interesting, like, piece about one of the actors.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you read, like, stories from old Hollywood. Those people sounded nuts. But doesn't it add to kind of, like, the flavor of the enjoyment? Like, it's fine. We don't have to stress out about it too much.
I think it's also shows that what impresses me from a creative point of view is they've taken these flavors and they just know how to add them together in the right way. Like, you're getting different flavors from what Sarah Snook's doing or Kieran Culkin or Matthew McFadden or whatever, right? And the Jeremy Strong flavor of taking Kendall extremely seriously, which makes him both absolutely tragic and fucking hilarious, is a work of genius on his part and on the people who are casting and making this show and understanding how to make these flavors work together. It's just, it's a brilliant balance. Matthew McFadden and Nicholas Braun as Tom and Greg are next level this season, or as I already said. The creators know they are gold and lean into it as much as they have, as far as I can remember from the show so far, and I love that. And I really want to call out Kieran Culkin this season, who I thought had the best season so far as Roman, and got a bunch of my favorite moments of the entire season. Just, honestly, award-worthy work from him, which I did not necessarily see coming. The weakness of this show is also not the production. The use of framing, tableaus, silence, and editing to communicate complex ideas beyond what's just written. And the dialogue we get is really, really good for the vast majority of it. Just the way it chooses to show awkwardness or tension between characters. There's a too far, I think it's like episode 4 or 5, that lingers between Logan and Kendall that is just excruciating and energizing to watch. The final probably 3 episodes, even like the final act, 30 minutes or something of this show, it felt like an action movie somehow. There's no action taking place. But the tension. It's a lot of people sitting.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people sitting and talking. And yet I was on the edge of my seat. And I honestly was like, did they start filming this in like 16 mil or something like that? Something's changed. It feels different. Mm. I don't understand. There is some incredible alchemy going on with this show.
Mm.
There's so much more I could say, but it's easy to talk about it when we talk about the ins and outs and spoilers. So I'm looking forward to that. But simply, I just want to say, Succession is the best show on TV right now. And if I wasn't in love with it here in my chest beforehand, I 100% am now.
Woohoo!
Damask.
Wonderful. Oh, cool. All right. You've really pepped me up more than my coffee has. Fabulous. Okay. All right. So, everybody, welcome back to the best show in town. You know, I feel overwhelmed with both joy and pity watching, you know, this pack of dum-dums trip over their own feet. And sometimes it's because they're legitimate idiots, and other times it's because daddy has tied their shoelaces together. Either way, it's an absolute delight to watch every single week, every single episode. It's not all, you know, schadenfreude though. You know, like I said, I'm overwhelmed by the joy and the pity. So let's start with the pity. So, you know, these kids. They can't seem to stop themselves from making mostly very obvious mistakes. You know, foresight, emotional intelligence, or self-reflection don't seem to be family traits that the kids have inherited. And I think it's...
Who would they have inherited them from?
Exactly. I'm hoping there's a great grandma somewhere that's, yeah, going to help guide them in the future like a Star Wars ghost. Look, the Logan siblings are all children. They are all stuck and they continue to make a lot of the time the same mistakes. And I think perhaps this season people could have been tricked into thinking that there isn't any progress here. And I didn't feel that way and I don't agree with that. I think a lot of the time it feels like we're not going to see characters learning and growing like we might in other shows, but instead we're watching, you know, the slow decay and rot of both the individual and family, and that can take its time. You know, you've got to let the bacteria do its thing, and a lot of that season was watching that real decay. You know, let's talk about siblings. I think this season Kendall is off his fucking rocker. It's beautifully hilarious and frustrating. And I think that's the ultimate Kendall combo. If, like, just someone to laugh at and feel in your heart and your stomach the deepest sadness for. Like, I feel like that is how I watch Kendall. And it's a marvel to watch because you should hate him. And sometimes you really do. But God damn it. Like, I feel like there is a sad love there I have for this character. You know, I think Shiv is kind of an outlier in the family in terms of her ability to hide a lot of what's going on. I think Kendall and Roman are less successful. Kendall certainly is. But I think Roman thinks he is, but isn't actually. Whereas Shiv can seem to hide a lot. And she has this outward self-assuredness. But I think this season, you know, below that surface, we see the cracks of, you know, daddy's newly cold gaze upon her, which I think is quite rare. I don't think she kind of experienced that when she was a more independent woman. But once
I don't remember seeing the fury that she has sometimes as well this season. Mm-hmm. There's elements of frustration that come through.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't remember seeing from Shiv in the past.
I think we have in terms of her marriage. But that seemed like self-contained, didn't it? Whereas this season, I think, as things become murkier for her and her position with the family changes and is a bit more fluid and she's not just Pinky to Dad anymore. I think we're really seeing some new colours on her, which has been really interesting.
And the relationship directly between her and Kendall this season is extremely fraught, particularly early on this season,
100%. And then we have Roman. Ah, Roman, my beautiful boy. My maniacal, terrifying boy. He's shown to be, I think, for me, a big piece of the heart of the show.
Amen.
Yeah, I think
it's in season one, and I stand by it.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely true. We'll get into that. I think while his siblings pretend that, you know, Dad didn't absolutely destroy any possibility of them being normal people, I think Kendall and Shiv both are quite convinced that they're fine. They're all good in terms of, you know, not having personality disorders. However, Roman, you know, he is all damage and humor and fear. You know, he's a scared little boy desperately trying to be mature. And I think he gets as close as he's ever been before to that maturity that he seeks. But that's really hard to maintain when Dad's backhand is right behind you at all times. Yeah, like you were saying, we've got some of the best moments from Roman. That performance is incredible. Like, breaks your heart. Oh, Roman's face can break my heart. Oh, God. It's
makes
really good.
Me laugh
really, really good.
As well, though. Like,
oh, he's so funny. Both, like, purposefully and also not, depending on the occasion. And I think that's the beauty of this show. All right, so let's talk about the joy a little bit. This show is still so funny. You know, it really never struggles to make me giggle or just simply burst out laughing. You know, I hate a stressful show. It's the reason why we haven't reviewed any other seasons of Search Party. I find it too stressful. And from the outside looking in, I think Succession looks like my personal nightmare. But it's not. I think, firstly, the funny for me outweighs the stress. You know, it is a comedic tragedy. But I also think the nuance it allows for the characters within the show to both feel and express their emotions allows me as the viewer to breathe.
Yeah.
They feel like real people and they're allowed to react to things as a person would. And it doesn't feel like watching a clown being smashed in the balls with a novelty sized, I don't know, sledgehammer for 55 minutes. Like, it doesn't. There's layers to it. And so I, as a viewer, can kind of go through the gambit of all those emotions.
I think that's the magic as well, though. Tragedy that's just tragedy, right? It's always just drama is exhausting. The way to balance it is to make sure there is that release valve with humor.
Yeah.
And Succession is so good at doing that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it can build the tension and then makes you laugh and build the tension. Yeah. Sometimes within a scene, sometimes within the same couple of seconds, you can be feeling everything here and then laugh through all sorts of emotions, and it's incredible. It's incredible.
I also think sometimes certain shows, they have, like, you know, they are comedic tragedies, but then the comedy comes from just laughing further at the comedy comes from making the tragedy worse.
Sure, yes.
And not from an emotional place. It's just me at the viewer pointing and laughing. But so often those comedic moments are an expression from the character of frustration, of kind of they're letting that out themselves. And so I can go, oh, okay, yes, like, still they're in this terrible predicament, but they can at least voice it or react to it in a way that feels satisfying as a viewer. Look, this show, you know, raised my expectations in season one. Season two was a gorgeous follow through. And season three maintains its status. You know, this show is quality. It has not faltered for me at all. Like you said, it's the best show on television. If you haven't watched it already, I don't know why you're listening to a season 3 review, you weirdo. You get a life. But watch it.
Thank you for listening. Like, yeah. I appreciate you listening.
Yes. Buy an ad. I don't know how that works. I don't know how capitalism works. Maybe that's why I find Succession so interesting. I don't know how it works, but I know I'm definitely failing at it. look, I love this show, and it's so beyond my personal interests, you know. But it's so fucking good, and the performances are mind blowing, and I just feel so happy to have it in my life. I love it. I love, love, love it.
Final score and ranking. You ranked season 1 as your favorite and 2 as your second favorite out of the previous 2 seasons. How would you score this one? How would you rank it?
It's a 5 again. I think the show is going to be 5 across the board unless like something really deviates. I'm like, oh, that was a mistake. In terms of ranking, I don't know if I can choose favorites. I want to do like a full, like when the show's finished, a full rewatch. I think that's going to be really important because it's such a journey that we're going on. And like Logan, I don't have any favorite children, but the difference is it's not because I don't love them. It's because I love them all. I don't know how to rank it at this point. I'm really, maybe after the final season, I'll be able to give you a full ranking.
Sure. So you gave it a 5 out of 5?
Yes, sir.
I don't know if you noticed in the final episode, there was some really big like lighting discrepancies. There was light, they were outside, but there was shadow and then there was light. And it was like, it was really messy. So I can only give this a 3.5 out of 5. I'm joking.
You piece of shit.
I'm giving this a 5 out of 5. For the first time in Succession.
Yeah.
For the first time in a while,
every
I feel
time
like.
You give a 5, we should have some kind of like sound go off, like a boo, 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 something like that.
The thing was, right, and I've said this before, it's like for a 5, I need to like, I got to think it's masterful. I've got to feel it inside me somewhere. I had loved Succession up until season 3. I was super excited for it, Succession to start. There was one thing I wasn't sure Succession could make me do. I wasn't sure Succession could make me cry. And then it did. And so,
welcome to the club, baby.
And so I can't deny it anymore. This show is masterful.
I'm going to cry just talking about you crying. Yeah. Oh, God.
I'm ranking this as my favorite season, obviously, because it's the best. It's the highest. So for me, it's season 3, then season 2, then season 1. Though absolutely all of them are wonderful. Let's not forget. Let's
so if you had to give the seasons one of the Roy siblings' names. Who's the Kendall? Who's the Shivies?
That's a weird. I don't know that makes any sense to try and do that. Maybe.
I need another copy. It's
yeah,
fine,
I need
Gorby.
To think about that a lot more. Which one's the Kendall, the Shiv, and the Roman? Hopefully there's no Connor. That's just, as long as there's no Connor season, we'll be okay.
Yeah, if season 4 is Connor, that's going to be really upsetting, yeah.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, guys. Now, before we dive into the very exciting spoilers of Succession, we'd like to ask everyone who enjoys the show to please review us on Apple Podcasts. Nothing helps the show to grow more than by throwing 5 stars and maybe a couple of nice words our way.
And to sweeten the deal, if we reach 25 written reviews on Apple Podcasts, and we're getting rather close. We've had a couple of nice, two new ones recently, some nice reviews in there. So we're creeping up there. You know, it might just take a couple more to get us over the edge. We will finally review Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 1.
Gorgeous. All right. We would also love you to share Hunting Seasons with anyone you know that, I don't know, they love Succession, they love any show, because I feel like it feels like emotionally that we've reviewed them all now. So just pass it along. Tell everyone how much you love us. We'd really, really appreciate it.
I was looking at the schedule for like next year and what's coming up, and there is so much TV to come up. We want to review Doctor Who season 13 at some stage, The Book of Boba Fett, The Legend of Vox Machina, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel season 4, and Just Like That maybe, Peacemaker, The After Party, How I Met Your Father. There's a lot coming
up. I cannot wait to review and Just Like That with you, because you haven't watched any Sex and the City, have you?
I've seen episodes here and there back in the day, but a long time ago, and I've seen the second movie.
Well, that's true. You have weirdly for our movie club. I feel like that's going to be a really fun episode, so I demand that we do it.
Next week, though, we'll be back with our review of The Great season 2. I promise it's actually happening this time. I'm sorry Succession succeeded it, but we'll get to The Great eventually. If you would like to contribute to our discussion of The Great, or if you have any thoughts on Succession, you can write to us or send us an audio recording that we may include on a future episode to contact at huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter at huntingscast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for Succession season 3.
You're now entering the spoiler zone.
Spoiler warning! From here on, we'll be discussing everything that happens in season 1, 2, and 3 of Succession. Before listening any further, we recommend watching all of Succession up to this point. If you've not yet done so, proceed with caution. There are spoilers ahead. You have been warned.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
I have lots of notes. I don't think it's going to be a problem to talk about this season, though, if I'm being honest.
All right, let's go.
Is there any way where you would like to start, though? Like, does it make sense to start at the end?
I mean, the turn of Tom.
The turn of Tom. That's where you want to start. I did a good job, I feel like, of not alluding at all that there was a big Tom anything.
I know. I didn't want to touch it. As, you know, Countess Luann from Real Housewives of New York says, please don't let it be about Tom. So when that happened, I was like, oh, yeah, I had a twist orgasm, if you will. I was like, this is fabulous. Oh, we've really mixed things up, sir. Let's talk about that.
So, first of all, did you see it coming?
Did I see it coming? Yes, but not that quickly.
Okay.
I was like, maybe next season, Mr. Tom is going to be a naughty boy. I didn't think he was going to be the final knife in that moment. Yeah.
Sure. I didn't really. I was just sort of along for the ride. Mm-hmm. Funnily enough, I watched this. I couldn't wait. I need to start, you know, getting my notes together and stuff. So I watched it the evening it was out, and Steph couldn't watch it with me. We had something else on that night beforehand, so she had to go to bed. So I watched it by myself. It was a mess. But the... I didn't see it coming, so that ending was really, really shocking to me. Mm. When Steph watched it the next day, I watched it with her, and she watched the Tom and Greg scene and turned to me and was like, is Tom going to betray them? And I had to put her off the scent. I was like, no, he's talking about like what they were saying about, you know, ATN getting on. And then when she got to the end, I was like, no, you picked it. I just wanted to try and preserve the moment for you because you were fucking right.
Yeah.
That was incredible. And it's the weirdest mix of emotions. Because the show had just got me on board with, like, these crazy kids are going to do it. They've, like...
I know.
And like, but, like, there was also that bit of me that was like, I mean, it's not going to happen because this show will never let them win, I don't think.
Let's see, how many times do we have to hear Logan say, you know, I always win for us to be like, oh, God, I think he's going to win again.
But you've watched Kendall and Shiv... and Roman come together. They're finally doing it. They're going to stand up to their dad. Yeah. That moment is happening. You're like, this is it.
It really felt like that Avengers scene where it goes like around the camera, pans around them. You're like, oh, they've come together. Oh, it's like Captain Planet, like combining forces. Oh my God, here we go. Yeah, I totally got sucked in, and I understand what you mean by action movie. Like, it did feel like that. It's like, oh, the team's all together. Oh, my God. United forces are going to be able to do it. And then, of course, they didn't. And I've, oh, what an idiot. What children we were to think that they could.
Mm. But there are so many reasons that I shouldn't be. That's what I love about this show. Mm. If you step back, right, if you step back and look at these people, I shouldn't give a shit about any of them. They're all fucking awful billionaire monsters, right?
Mm.
But in the show is so good at its craft that we get to this moment and I'm like, here we fucking go. Let's do it. Come on, Roman. You can stand up to Logan. You're fucking doing it. You're fucking doing it. And then it doesn't happen. Caroline sold them down the river. Fucking
cup. Of course she did.
Of course she did.
Mm-hmm.
And then the reveal of Tom.
Oh, my God.
And in my instant reaction is, fucking Tom, you snake, how dare you? And then the other part of me kicks in and goes, oh, good for you, Tom.
Yeah.
Yes. Good for you. You mm-hmm. fucking absolutely should, because Shiv, if nothing else, is a monster.
She is a monster.
She
to
is
him.
Yeah. A monster.
It's so confusing, and I don't mean in like in a nonsensical way. I mean confusing in like a naturally human way is that she is so terrible to Tom. Like, she is a monster. But then she's also like, in moments of emotional distress or a needing of emotional understanding when it comes to like her siblings or a family relationship, she seems to be a bit more present and understanding. It's because Roman is incapable of feeling vulnerable around his family. Fair enough. Mm. But there are moments where I'm like, oh, she seems to like at least get it and acknowledge it and respond to it like a normal human. So I forget that she has sociopathic
tendencies.
But then we get splashes of her with Tom and she is so terrible to him. Oh my God, that's insane. We will get back to the ending because it's so good and there's so many layers going on there. When Shiv and Tom are like playing those sexy games and she's just like, fuck, I man. Don't love you. And then the next day she's so manipulative and being like, you can't tell someone they can say whatever they want to you in bed and then get angry. Wow, Tom, that's really manipulative. And I was like, you're a fucking bitch. I was so angry. And he just like, for most of the season, he is a beaten down man, right?
Mm.
But what is happening is that he is positioning himself so wonderfully that final turn in the end, you're like, oh, wow, those like, what felt like he was digging his own grave were just tiny steps to the top.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that I think they're all conscious because I think he genuinely was terrified that he was going to prison. But that is the way that he has positioned himself. And what a way to end. Yeah.
I think, let's talk about Tom for a second. Yes, I think the season is him playing a game. It wasn't always masterful. I think he took some gambles.
Yes.
But they ultimately paid off. So, like, little things to think. Well, what's interesting is you think back to the end of season two and how that ends, right? With between Shiv and Tom. And their marriage is in a really bad place at the end of that season. Ooh, you just don't see it coming back from there. But the bit I'd forgotten until I re-listened to our review was that Shiv had gone into bat for him and said anyone but Tom in terms of who they were going to sacrifice to get through this scandal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Shiv had done that. It was the one time she'd done anything for him, as far as I could tell. But I don't know. Tom didn't see that. He didn't know that happened. And then Shiv continued to be a piece of shit to him, to his face at every opportunity, kept him out of the loop, kept like not considering him at every move. And so Tom started to just look after himself a little bit more. And things like, do you remember in episode two when Kendall has the siblings come around and he's at Rava's place and Shiv comes over and Roman comes over and Connor comes over and they're talking about like, what if we just fucking did this? You guys come to me, we'll kill Dad, the company's ours, we'll bring, you know, Waystar Royko into the future. And they're kind of considering it. And then
I love all those moments. Yeah, that's great.
And then
everyone's playing both sides, but like they all aren't sitting on the fence. And yeah,
absolutely.
It's great.
Mm. And then donuts show up from Logan
Ooh.
which says something like, hope you're having a lovely tea party or something like that. And it's at that moment where the quote-unquote poison donuts show up, that Connor says no, that Roman says no, and eventually Shiv says no. And they didn't know who knew to send the donuts. Well, Greg saw Shiv arriving. Mm-hmm. Greg tells Tom.
Yeah.
Tom tells Logan. Logan sends the donuts. So yeah. Tom had already been playing the Logan side of this since about episode two at least. And then throughout, then when he offers himself up to be like, I'll be the guy who goes down for you if you need somebody to go to jail, he frets about that in absolutely amazing comical sense throughout the rest of the season. But when he is flipping Greg's desk and pounding his chest with it's not just relief that he's not going to jail. He also knows he just banked some fucking gold with Logan.
It's payoff.
Right? And he is going to be able to cash that in. And when he gets to the end of this season, he has the ultimate opportunity to get the big man on side. And he makes that deal with the devil, baby. And he brings Greg along for the ride.
So good.
And fuck, I cannot blame the guy.
No. And I think like you mentioned just before talking about how Greg, you know, makes some serious like gambles with his position.
Tom or Greg?
Tom.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think like that really speaks to the fact that he has had to work to get to where he is, and he has had a very different life experience than the Roy siblings. So I think like making those big moves, he's practiced at that. Whereas the kids don't. They really struggle to make sometimes even the most any decision without daddy in the room. Whereas Tom feels confident enough to do it. And yeah, this is the season where we really see that pay off. And, you know, Logan talks about like really respecting that people who make their own way. And that's why he has such resentment towards his own kids. And I think Tom has the potential to be one of the few people within the family that he can respect in a way.
Well, we don't know what the situation is with Waystar Royco because of their being bought, basically, by Gojo at the end of this season. But if anyone, if you had to say a likelihood of who's going to be Logan's successor right now, it's currently the son-in-law. Like, he is technically, I guess, a son-in-law. And right now, Tom is the golden child. There's no doubt about that. I thought I tell you what I never expected from this show was essentially for Tom and Greg to become like the villains in a way. Like it's been,
but also like the love story of the show.
So that when they're talking about Nero and and Sporus, that story that, you know, Tom is like having an existential crisis about the potential of going to jail, basically. And he comes and talks to Greg and talks about the story of, Nero and Sporus. Nero pushed his wife down the stairs, which happened in the show essentially, and then married his eunuch and then had him dressed in his wife's clothes. that was the show telling us what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And that moment, which is basically a proposal to Tom, like, do you want to make a deal with the devil? It's like, what would I do with a soul anyway?
To Greg, yeah.
To Greg, sorry.
Yeah.
We'll do the soul anyway. Boo souls. Fuck. Is, like, hilarious and also a little bit like, I can't believe Greg's at this place now. Greg has organically somehow gone from the bumbling cousin who somehow found himself inside this family at the high level to selling his soul to the devil and actually, you know, he's against Greenpeace and he's, playing two different women for status at the same time and, like... Yeah. All this sort of shit. And to go from the guy who was the hero, in a sense, at the end of last season, because he was the guy that gave Kendall the documents, to Kendall mistreating him so poorly that he has gone flipped to the other side completely.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And I think that's also the thing about Greg. It's like, now he's been, like, cut off from his grandpa. And so he's in much of a somewhat similar situation than Tom. These people don't have that assurance of like, oh, well, I'm getting a payday no matter what. So, their moral compass shifts and their ability to take big swings changes, and watching that relationship develop has been such a joy to watch. From being like Tom being terrifying in his relationship to Greg, being like, oh God, I really hope he doesn't murder this poor boy, to them like, you know, these are kind of the only honest conversations going on are happening between these two people. And they're always so funny and so weirdly complicated. I think Roman is has an emotional truth that brings heart to the show. And this relationship between Tom and Greg is the romance heart of the show. Yeah.
100%. Also, just in that scene where Tom proposes, quote unquote, to Greg, he says, who in this family has ever looked out for you, essentially?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really, really good point.
Yeah.
Is that the siblings in particular are never there to bat for them. And the other scene I think that's really informative is the one where Kendall tries to get Tom on board. Like, he knows that Tom would be an asset to their case, and maybe he'd be more likely to you know, have some success with the DOJ if Tom was to flip. But Tom's line, it's like, I've seen you get fucked a lot.
Yeah.
And I've never seen Logan get fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very good point. It's like, you can make all the promises you want, but you keep fucking up. Mm-hmm. And Logan just doesn't. He just always wins. Why would I leave that?
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't argue with that.
And it's a moment I think that's really good to remind the audience. Because I think, you know, a lesser show would have done like the really righteous moment where Tom does flip and does the right thing, and it feels really good as a viewer to watch. But to have them explain exactly why, and with a lot of evidence from the show, from previous seasons, to be like, well, you just simply wouldn't. You wouldn't, because you know how it goes, because it's happened for their entire lives. Logan wins. You have to be by his side or you will get maimed.
Mm-hmm. Amazing stuff. You were talking about Roman a second ago.
Oh god!
Now, what bit are you talking about specifically there? That could be a number of things.
Yep. And it is a lot of things, but immediately what springs to mind is obviously, you know, in still talking about that final scene, and Roman, all of his children are kicked dogs, but Roman is the kicked dog locked in a cage outside, just destroyed little boy. And to see him standing by his siblings, who he really loves, pretends he doesn't, but absolutely loves and adores. And because of that, he is able to have a moment of strength, even, you know, but with such vulnerability on his face, and you see the stakes on his face, to say to his dad, no, it's not going to happen. And then the gun turns into a sausage, and then to speak about love, and to see that in that moment, he feels like he's lost all of that momentum with his dad. It's all gone. Everything he was working for is gone.
And starting to succeed with it felt like on some level as well. Like,
genuinely, he was doing really well. And
there
was a bit
in episode 8, I think, where he went to see Mathis, or whatever the guy's name is, the Gojo guy. Mm. And it was like Roman was having the adult in the room, which was a really rare thing. And he was having to keep this conversation on track, and he was having to make the moves. And I won't say it was perfectly played. He was getting somewhat played by, what's his name, Skarsgård. But just to see him be able to, like, be focused and do the thing and maybe, you know, show his potential to be the successor here was very rewarding. And and then to have him getting so close, to really feeling like he was making traction, to really feel like he was impressing his dad, and then to just, as you said, have it all crumble in his hands.
And at the end for him to be, you know, on the floor watching as his dad walks away is, oh boy, heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. But hope, I mean, that's the thing is like naturally I'm like, well, hopefully now he's, you know, their city has been razed to the ground. They've nothing left. Is this going to be Roman's character's turn into something else? But that's my natural inclination as a viewer. But this show never does what I think they're going to do.
Yeah.
Connor says to Roman at Kendall's birthday, he says, "You're not a real person."
Mm.
And I think that has been true in a lot of ways. And that's how he performs.
Kendall said to Roman, is that what you're saying?
No, what's the oldest brother?
Kendall, yeah. Kendall says to Roman.
No. The real eldest.
Oh, Connor.
Yeah. Connor says to Roman, "You're not a real person."
I'm pretty sure Kendall says that. I just rewatched that scene.
No, it's okay. Connor.
Maybe Kendall says it later. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, no, sorry. You are so right. It is Kendall.
Kendall says it as they're leaving. It's right before Roman pushes him.
Yeah.
Or no, it's maybe just after he pushes him. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you are.
Connor's just concerned with having his coat on in that episode.
And it bothers Kendall so much. I love it.
Take your fucking coat off.
Oh, that's a tragic episode. It certainly is. Yeah. So I think this is us being able to see and Roman as a real person, him being able to experience real tragedy because he put the work in and he's actually tried for the first time in his life, and then to still lose, devastating. And I think we see so many more layers of him, and I really enjoyed watching it.
One thing we talked about last when we were discussing season two was that season one was sort of like the what if Kendall was going to be the successor season. Mm-hmm. And then season two was sort of the what if Shiv. And we theorized that maybe season three will be the what if Roman. And it kind of was, not necessarily directly. It's not like I felt like he had him by his side. Logan had Roman by his side the way he sort of did Shiv in season two, though Shiv overplayed her hand really badly in season two.
Every time she overplays it. Anyway.
Overplays her hand. But it was. It was like Roman started to like work his way in and have some success. And it really was. He got the closest he's been to being realistically considered by his dad. And then almost in one bad text message, fucked that right up.
Oh my God. That was such a good scene.
So episode 8 had some banger moments. There was the stuff with Shiv and Tom, including like the sex play thing, whatever you want to call it, right? Then the follow-up talking about freezing embryos the next day, were part one and part two of just devastation for Tom.
Shiv immediately talking about like if one of them died or they left each other. I'm like, fucking hell, Shiv.
Then there was the Kendall having dinner with Logan scene, which was just Shakespearean, and then ended with the part at the end with Kendall on the floating bed in the pool, which was a really interesting. I think that was a really interesting, not red herring necessarily, but it gave me a certain expectation of what the finale would be, and it wasn't what they were ever intending, but it like put me off the scent as to what the finale was going to be, and which was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the Roman dick pic scene.
Oh, my God. I love that scene.
Kieran Culkin should be nominated for an Emmy for some of the facial expressions he makes alone. The way he cowers into his chair when he realizes that Logan has the fucking dick pic is so incredible. It was difficult to watch, hilarious, traumatizing, all of it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing work from everyone involved.
Yeah. Yeah,
are you a sicko?
The face he makes when he like he starts off like, you know, kind of happy with himself and then confused and then like, checks his phone and then the shrinking, his eyebrows raise in like horror and his face gets small like a little boy's and just like, oh God.
He just had like the first pat on the back from his dad basically mm-hmm. ever. He's somehow done the work and pulled this off. He thought he was coming to bring bad news. He somehow got his dad in the position to like, we should, you know. And then it instantly falls apart. Fucking.
Oh, God.
Amazing.
Oh, God. And he's, it really makes you fall in love with Roman, even though he's such a dickhead. Like, it's such a relatable tragedy. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, fuck, of course I fucked it up in such a silly way. But I did love the moment when he was having the conversation with his dad post dick pic. And his dad was like, you know, Jerry's like a million years old and all that stuff and bullshit.
Especially then, since he's fucking his goddamn
exactly.
assistant.
Ugh, yeah, he's a pig. And then I really enjoyed Roman at the end being like, oh, like, I'm not a feminist or anything, but probably don't fire Jerry after receiving a dick pic from me.
I'm not a radical feminist, Dad, but perhaps you should not fire her for receiving dick pictures of my dick. Yeah. It's just
And then just leaves the room, yeah.
And then Jerry, it was interesting too, because that stuff's been happening for a while, obviously, the Jerry-Roman stuff last season. I thought it was an interesting turn this season where they made it clear that while Jerry might have been having some fun on some level, this was never something that was... what that was anything more serious than that. No. For Roman, it kind of was because it was weirdly liberating for him, I think. He found something that worked for him mm-hmm. when he's been very frustrated with his own sexuality and what he finds, you know, arousing or whatever. But Jerry puts up a hard line multiple times this season and says to him, you know, you've got to keep remembering I am successful because I avoid mess and I always come from the angle as how does this serve my interests?
Mm-hmm.
Which is the other tragedy at the end of this season Roman comes begging to Jerry on his
betrayed
knees.
By two mummies in one scene. Just that's a lot to deal with.
Well, I don't know if it's betrayal. I don't know if the Jerry thing is betrayal. I think Jerry is just doing what she's always done, which is being pragmatic. And
but I think he would see it as betrayal.
Oh, he
because,
certainly
like,
feels that way.
Yeah,
yes.
is what I mean. Is because like, you know, he's really kind of teamed up with her and you know, in moments of like upheaval within the company, he's really like gone to bat for Jerry. Believed in that they were working together to achieve his final end of, you know, becoming CEO with Jerry by his side as his queen. And then for that moment to realize that the company is number one for her and her position within that company is number one. And she's not vile about it or violent about it. But that is the reality. And for him to kind of realize that in that moment, really hard.
I also wonder if the dick pic moment hadn't happened, whether Jerry might have been more willing to help him. But she was put in such a compromising position by that and that conversation she has with Shiv, which Shiv is trying to play the situation against Roman via Jerry, but it puts Jerry in an awkward position where she has to distance herself from him at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like she can't, she can't play favorites. She can't be seen... because it could jeopardize her position in that company, could jeopardize her career. So she has to play a straight bat and say, sorry.
Yeah. I also wonder if the dick pic thing hadn't happened, Roman might have even been allowed in the room. Because when they're driving there, Shiv, who knows? I can't remember anything apparently, says to him like, Dad thinks there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And I think that moment kind of, solidified that once again to the audience. Like, he does think that about Roman.
It was almost like all season as Roman was succeeding. That dick pic moment is like the, but remember.
Yeah.
There's this fatal flaw in Roman that while he might succeed, his base... personality or deviant nature is never going to fly with Logan. He's not going to turn a blind eye to that.
Yeah.
And it was always like a flaw built into him that was going to get him one day. And this is how it happened.
And each of them, you know, have their fatal flaw. Like 100%. Obviously that is Roman's. Shiv's is she always fucking overplays her hand and walking with such confidence with like shit all to back it up and ends up being embarrassing and embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
And Kendall is He is
self-sabotager.
So, self-sabotager, emotionally off the wall.
Yeah.
Unable to regulate his own emotions or reactions, all of that stuff. Yeah, so, oh, these guys.
I do wonder now, we've sort of had the season of Kendall, the season of Shiv, the season of Roman, and they've all now been betrayed by Daddy, basically, right? They've mm-hmm. all had that moment where because that was the thing, like Roman was the last one to have that I can't trust Dad moment anymore. Kendall says it, don't trust him. Shiv says it to Roman, don't trust him.
Mm-hmm.
Roman finally, you know, stands up and gets thrown under the bus, you know, in the coldest way. And now he's going to know he can't ever trust Logan ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's power in that going forward, but they're going to have to somehow rebuild themselves up out of whatever hole they're in at the end of this season.
Mm.
It's incredible stuff. We should talk about Kendall, which surprises. I don't know how we've talked about everybody else except Kendall so far. It's pretty amazing, really. It shows the depth of this show.
Mm.
It's a huge Kendall season. We ended season two with him throwing Logan in as he's actually the mastermind behind all the shit that's been going on at Waystar Royco. And he's the guy that the DOJ should be coming after, and starts this whole sequence of events. Logan has cut him out of the company. Everybody is against him. He's the betrayer. He's the Judas. He's the traitor. You wonder, you hope, you pray that maybe Kendall can make this work, but Kendall is Kendall, and it was never, ever going to happen.
As soon as he walked with that fucking attitude, I'm like, well, you're fucked, Kendall.
It unravel piece by piece as he changes his lawyers and gets so caught up in the image of it all and trying to control the narrative and trying to lean into the jokes and trying to be some sort of radical feminist or I don't know, all these things he wants to be, shitty Jesus, as Roman keeps calling him, which is a great line, and just watch it all fall apart. Whatever potential was there crumbles in his hands because he's got that opposite of Midas touch. Anything he touches turns to fucking shit every time, because he's Kendall, and Kendall can never make this stuff work. It's heartbreaking to watch, and to watch him just spiral into somehow, because I remember last season when he was sort of like almost comatose sometimes through that, but he gets to a point, he builds himself to a point when he's told, you know, he's not a killer by Logan finally. He gets to a point where he steps up and says, you know what, I'm going to be the hero now.
Mm-hmm.
And to watch that disappear before his eyes, and he just spirals into an even worse place than he's been ever in this show. And that final conversation with Logan where he asks him, like, what he was there, whether he tried to save the kid, like, really pushes the you're a fucking murderer button to the point where subconsciously or consciously he tried to kill himself at the end of episode 8. Oh, fucking, just a tragedy. The birthday episode, all of it.
Oh my God, that birthday episode was so sad.
Sad.
In so many different ways, was just so sad. The isolation, the desperation. As he's traipsing around in such a cocky way, in that, you know, the space is filled, but fucking hell, it couldn't feel colder or emptier at all. Every time he enters a room, and to end with him in that present room is pretty sad and full on episode, even though it takes place at a birthday party.
It's interesting also that final shot when he goes back to his apartment, and I can't remember the character's name, but his girlfriend, you know, one of the Pierces or whatever, who's been sort of there since sort of like the end of season two. And just that, like, she's cradling him, but Kendall's a fucking mess, and she's not, obviously not up for that. We never see the breakup, but we just don't see her next episode. And you know that she is pissed off. Like, it's as simple as that. She has abandoned him because she was never in a place really to, like, all she did was sort of get him up having fun again, which started some of this spiral back down as well. He was like a cheerleader when he was being a dickhead and fucking himself around. And the moment he's actually needing help, she's pissed off. Oh, Kendall. Fucking hell.
Indeed.
But Then we get to the scene. And like, there are a lot of amazing scenes this season. But the scene for me is the one in the middle of episode 9 in that parking lot when Shiv and Roman have come to Kendall and said, we need to talk because Dad's trying to fuck us over for the company. What are we going to do about it? And Kendall just says, I'm not here. I'm not here, guys. Sits down on the ground. Is a broken mess. They're all like, what the fuck is wrong with you, buddy? Come on, just, you know. And he starts to finally tell them that what happened at Shiv's wedding.
Yeah, crazy.
Which is heartbreaking. And I never really thought I knew what that scene would look like.
Yeah, I just didn't expect it really to happen. I was like, oh, this show's probably not going to give us that. But yeah. I'm glad they did, yeah.
I think if I expected anything, I expected that at some point Logan might press the nuke button, which is like reveal what happened to Kendall. Would it splash back onto him somewhat? Sure, but Logan will survive because Logan always does. But it would blow up Kendall.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't expect is Roman to be the fucking hero. Roman, the guy who pretends to not have emotions, who's the constantly making fun of anyone who gives a shit, to when they... Because that was the thing. I think it's a perfect build-up, right? At the end of episode 8, Kendall has had a serious moment where he may have died or tried to kill himself. The next day, they all show concern, but Roman puts up a wall. I'm fine. Leave me alone. The next day, Connor and Shiv and Roman sit down and they want to have a talk with him. They're like, dude, what's up? Something's not right. And Kendall puts up the wall. I'm fine. I can't believe you can't do like this. You guys all need intervention before I do, etc. And it's like there is real concern there, but no one in this fucking family knows how to communicate.
No, not at all.
And then finally, Kendall does make himself vulnerable to these two. And they are siblings at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the Roman... I've watched this scene 3 times. Every time I've watched, I've cried. The Roman way of, even through his dumb fucking jokes, of just trying
so
to...
So off-color, but
it's
yeah.
It's so off-color, but the way he tries to, like, this is the story of a hero. If I was there, I would have fucking run away. And, like, Kendall's, like, did you... Like, you just ran? He's like, no, I dived. I rewatched the scene as well. He does try and dive and save the kid a couple of times. I was like, fucking... Well, there you go. At worst, you're an irresponsibler. And, like, the way that he, like... reframes the situation in a way that I don't think, you know, Kendall's about to forgive himself right away.
No.
But just gives him that spark of hope and humanity and understanding that Logan never did. I felt that brotherly love that obviously exists between them, but is always pushed the side because they've got their other agendas.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking broke my heart.
Yeah.
I love that scene part of me.
An amazing scene because I think, like, you know, obviously so much of Kendall's shame is because, like, he's had to be in the dark with it, and so it grows and it swirls and it consumes him. And then to have this moment of, you know, to expel it from his body for a moment and for it to be received in that way from Roman and Shiv, and no one being like, you know, reacting like his dad.
Yeah.
It being like, you know, you make me sick, you're a murderer, there's something really dark and disgusting about you. But to be like, shit happened. I'd love when Roman turns to Shiv, and I think he says, like, you've killed a kid, right? And she's like, yeah, I've killed a kid. Like, obviously, they're just joking in their way, which is disgusting because someone has died. But also, that's the only way for them to show love and compassion for one another. I love that. I also love the mirroring of, well, two scenes. Obviously, the scene in the boat shed at Shiv's wedding. And then also at the very end, we see the reversal of Roman having his hands on Kendall's shoulder.
Yeah.
And then at the end, we see Kendall putting his hands on Roman's shoulder when they're both devastated. Yeah, it's beautiful to have those moments from time to time in this show.
Because it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. No one ever talks like that. And they still kind of don't talk like that. No one says to Kendall, hey, buddy, it's okay. I love you.
Yeah.
It's like... Roman does it the Roman way, which is to make a shitty off-collar joke about how he didn't get a gin and tonic for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But but it has the same effect and, mm-hmm. and the touching and like the way he like roughhouses his stupid shaved head as they're walking away. And like, I think it's masterful. They don't betray the characters for a second.
No.
And it still works. I just cannot speak highly of enough. That to me was the moment I knew. It was like, oh, this is a 5-star season and this is a 5-star show and this is my favorite show on television right now.
Mm.
Did you have any particular thoughts on like where Logan is? I don't feel like much changes for Logan. Logan just Logan's, except that he is willing to sell the company, which is something I don't think anyone ever really thought he would consider doing.
Yeah, I think he is, and he would never admit this. I think he understands that both he and the company are on a steep decline.
Yep.
And he's a very smart man, and I think he's evaluated the situation, understands that it's time to bow out.
Yep.
And so that is what he's going to do. He's going to do the winning play, and this is how he can leave and still feel like he has won. So that's what he's going to do. So yeah, if he can't absorb a company that's going to keep him afloat, then yeah, it makes sense to me that happened. You know, I always assume that Logan's going to figure out a way to keep the company.
Yeah.
But I think it seems like he's happy to kind of, do what he's doing. So we shall see next season how that plays out.
You do get the sense that even he realizes he can't keep doing this forever, that he is tired. Mm. I mean, we have that bit with the Adrian Brody episode where he fucking has a huge medical problem. He's going for a walk. He has the UTI thing where he's just not there.
Yeah.
Logan is nothing if not prideful and arrogant, but it shows that he does have a certain level of understanding of his own limitations. That he can go, no, this is only going to get worse from here. Now is the time.
Yeah, we also have that great scene with Logan. I think his name's Madsen, like Skarsgård's character.
Yeah, the Gojo guy.
Yeah, where he's like, oh, are you actually excited about the future? And Logan's like, oh, well, that's just something that you say. And then seeing kind of the smarts and the ability and that drive that he probably really had when he was younger as well, and recognizing that in someone else, being like, yeah, maybe like my head isn't quite in the game like it used to be in that way, with that level of kind of, drive and consume and build and all that stuff. I think we're seeing his slow acceptance that he's happy to leave.
There was the line from Mattson or whatever was something like, I noticed you haven't punched me in the nose. And it's like when he made the offer like to buy you out or whatever, right? And he's like, the thing is, every part of you wants to tell me to fuck off, except the part of you that knows that everything I'm saying is true. And that's the truth of Logan. Is he's not a fucking idiot. And when he plays the power move and tells people to fuck off, it's because he knows ultimately that he can either control those people or he can brute force his way through that situation. But this time, it's not the case. I think it's a very interesting place for him to be. I'm fascinated to see where we're at next season with Waystar Royko, and like, is this a big process? This, does it just happen? Do we have a time jump to a situation where we are Gojo Royko or whatever it is, right? Or is that the season is like making this all happen, and like, is there more to go on there? I don't know. You look like you had something to say.
No, I was thinking of like, it's so futile to predict these things.
Oh, I wouldn't even bother trying.
I was like, do I have a thought on that? I was like, I just simply don't, because every season I'm taken on such a ride in a way that I didn't expect but so enjoy. I was just thinking about how much I'm going to enjoy next season.
Yeah, absolutely. Finally, I think, I don't know, unless you've got something else to say about the main characters, I did want to quickly talk about Connor and Willa. Who are they? Just the funnest little sideshow. The I'm the eldest son bit from Connor, just like, take me fucking seriously, please, of it all, is very funny.
Yeah, but there's moments of it is very funny, but I really enjoy it is heartbreaking, and he is like a joke clown character.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that he is an eldest son, they always joke about like how he was like, you know, from
he's irrelevant.
You know, the dodgy womb and, you know, their dad moved on to someone else. And he's a side character that is acknowledged to be a side character in the show, which is so heartbreaking. Yeah, I know. I feel bad for Connor because we also, you know, get that moment where Roman needs to find a happy story from his childhood with his dad, and it's actually a memory with Connor who took him camping. And he was obviously the older brother and probably looked after them and did things like that a bit. And it's just very sad. And then he's in this poor relationship with this woman that is there, but that's about all she is.
The sound that came out of Willa when Connor got down on one knee to propose.
Oh my God.
Was brilliant, comic genius. But fuck, when she decides they're waiting for that car to pick them up in the last episode, fuck it. How bad can it be? Oh my God. I was laughing hysterically. But then just every time they show Willa for the rest of the episode and just like, what the fuck have I done? Look on her face.
Yeah, I've made a mistake.
Oh my God. Yeah,
like the absolute pity of like, oh, you're a nice man.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's going to be, I'm like, hopefully she doesn't have to sign a prenup and it's the best decision she ever makes in her life. But I doubt it.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
I was just thinking about how we hear their mum say, you know, Logan likes to kick people to see if they'll come back. And just thinking about Shiv and Tom, like, boy, does she love to kick Tom. And I was trying to think, I don't feel like Kendall doesn't do that. And I don't feel like Roman does that either.
Roman kicks everybody. Right?
Yeah.
That's his thing. He just kicks.
Yeah.
Right?
But I feel like they're love taps, to be honest with you.
In a sense.
Yeah. But I feel like Shiv is the one that is obviously most like Logan. And she fucking kicks to hurt.
Yeah.
And kicks to damage and wound because she wants you to, you know, lick your injuries and come crawling back, and Tom is her dog. And that's really heartbreaking to see.
It's, it's funny because we said, I think in like season one, when I didn't know Shiv this well yet, that she was the most like Logan. She was the scariest to me because I think she was maybe the best player. And we found out that's not actually true of Shiv. She's a bit of a pretender.
Yeah.
But if there's anything she does take from her dad, it's how she handles her emotional relationships to the people closest to her.
Her cruelty, is unlike her brother's, I think.
What do you think she inherits from her mum? Do you think there is some resentment of her mum that also informs how she treats Tom? Like, she has such a fraught that, as someone said on Twitter, the curse of I hope you have a marriage as fulfilling as and loving as mine, or whatever that she says to Caroline, is like, I love the levels on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think because she idolizes her dad so much and sees her mum as weak and a bit pathetic and all that stuff. I think that certainly carries over to then how she treats her spouse. She wants to be Logan, so she is in her marriage, and Tom is, you know, taking up the position of her mother, someone who, she has no respect for, doesn't like. And so, excuse me. So, Tom gets that. But, I'd love to know more about the mum. She says, you know, since she was 13 that, you know, she's been that way for a long time. And I think both of her parents are pretty shit people. I think she's a nice cocktail.
I kind of love the way that Caroline gets used in that she shows up for like one or two episodes a season. And always seems to throw a bit of a hand grenade in there whenever she's around.
Yeah.
Like
this lurking presence where you're like, oh, fuck, what's she going to do now?
And never has it been worse than what she did in this episode. And just like, I really think it's for the best. And I'm sorry, I've got to go now. It's like, I know it's your fucking wedding night, but what the fuck did you just do? Oh my God.
The fact that she was willing to have like all these in-depth discussions with Logan about how to like dissolve her children's stake within the company or their power, but then doesn't have time to discuss it with them, the people who are like going to suffer the consequences of that, is so fucking telling of her priorities.
Do you remember last season, season two, Kendall goes to stay, although I think they all go to stay with her, and then Kendall wants to have the conversation evening. And she's like, I'm not really in the place. Can we talk about this tomorrow? And then she just leaves a note. Like, he was finally going to talk to somebody that wasn't Logan about this. And then she just leaves a note saying, I'm going to go, bye. Fucking hell.
Yeah. Which makes me think that, like, she does run away. And as much as she doesn't feel
she
did that, she fucking did. She did give her children away to this clearly emotionally abusive man, and probably sometimes physically abusive as well. And not to say that she isn't herself emotionally abusive, but she did do that to her children.
Absolutely.
She's a fucking shit mom, and Logan is a worse father.
You didn't have any real side notes, but I've got a ton that hopefully jumping up points. Little details that I loved. Shiv, the background image that comes up when Logan calls her is Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, that's right.
The Trojan horse that Stewie sends Kendall, I think,
amazing.
Is fantastic as well. Jerry got to be CEO, interim CEO, but it was like, I celebrated that Jerry got to be put in that position. I was like, that's the right choice. I mean, they realistically couldn't make it any of the kids because that's too much power for any of them to really have at this stage. But it felt like Jerry was deserving. She's played the game well. Marsha, when she shows back up in like episode one or two and like, you know, Logan's like, I need you close, even though he's completely fucked her over by being with the Holly Hunter character anyway, last season. And just comes in and immediately starts like, and here is what I am going to get to continue to stay in this marriage.
Yeah, good
this
for relationship. Her.
Good for fucking her. Marsha knows what she's doing, and I rate that about her. Even though she seems to have like faded into the background a little bit. She's become less relevant as the show's gone on.
Which
I like that she's still playing her game.
Yeah, I don't mind that because she's a smart woman. And so for her to not be present is the smart move.
Absolutely. Tom was tracking Shiv's cycle, like a full-on Arbed.
Arbed, yeah, exactly. That's what I thought.
The entrance to Kendall's party being like, how early did you realize it was like the fucking birth canal and then out? Oh, fuck,
look,
that was so funny.
I feel like the L word has done that like a couple of times for like a nightclub. Okay. There's been an opening to a nightclub that is literally a vaginal opening. And then Roman's reaction to that was gorgeous.
Playing Monopoly is like something you have to do inside a prestige TV show, I believe, now. We saw it happen in The Sopranos in the last season of that. And then we finally got to see the Roys playing it. And I was surprised it didn't go harder on like some of these things. Just the idea that they all cheat, like cheating's part of the game, was sort of as far as it went. But it was nice to see them play like the board game version of their lives. Logan is trying to have another kid. Logan wants an heir, eating the maca root and the walnuts and shit, and is like, that's interesting.
Yeah, which makes me think that, maybe that's like, he's ready for retirement, he's ready for the next stage in his life, and he wants to just like separate himself from both the company and his family, because as Connor says, he's like, he's like finding a new heir. He's done with you guys. This is how I felt the whole time. I didn't enjoy that moment from Connor.
I don't have the lines on hand, but I loved the big the sit down in like the Denny style diner, whatever it was, between Greg.
Oh my God, I love
Tom
that.
Talking about like the prison food. And
oh
like
my,
you have
it's
to
so
you,
funny.
You have to like treat like Afghanistan. You go like set up a base operations in the middle and then like work your way out from there again territory.
The concept of Tom like eating at a diner every day to prepare himself for prison food is so hilarious and dramatic. Brilliant.
With like this food, it's going to be this food with like 30 to 50% less flavor. Like just that whole concept is so amazing. And then when he goes back with Kendall, he knows exactly what he's going to order.
How much that conversation between Tom and Greg about like how much they've been doing their research.
Yes.
Which is just great. Yeah.
Just in general, this show is like, it's somehow very Shakespearean in terms of like the comedy tragedy. It's also sometimes kind of like Stoppard, like the farcical nature of it. Mm-hmm. And like scenes like that actually exemplify it. Fuck, it's so good. Lines that I love. The good tweet, bad tweet game they were playing in the back of the limo. And one tweet was, Kendall is just a bootleg Ross with a daddy complex.
I love that.
Beaten only by the other bad tweet. He clearly has mental health issues coupled with guilt and a drug addiction. That's all this is. And then just silence until eventually Kendall just goes, boo. a really, I thought, very good line from Logan when they were talking about like having to play nice with the DOJ. It's like, this is, I think he's having a conversation with Shiv. And he's like, and she says, it's the law. And Logan says, the law is people and people is politics. And I know people. And it's like, that is very true. I don't think I've ever seen such a succinct explanation of how people with power and influence just, the law does not apply to them because ultimately it's upheld by people and people are fucking corruptible. That was beautifully said. And then the line that Kendall says to Logan in their like final dinner together in episode 8, you won because you're corrupt and so is the world. I was like, basically it, Kendall. You've summed
it up. No shit, Kendall. I can't believe it's taken you 45 years to figure it out.
And some quick observations as well. I can't remember if we mentioned this on the podcast or not. Ken's assistant, Jess, who doesn't really, I think she disappears somewhere through the middle of the season. I'm guessing probably because she was doing Why the Last Man, because she was Beth in Why the Last Man. That's Juliana Canfield. It was nice to make that connection this season. The guy that Caroline is marrying, Peter, I'm pretty sure he's like, do you remember like the head secretary in The Crown? The really stiff upper lip guy in season 1 and 2?
That is him.
I'm pretty sure that's him, yeah. I couldn't find the actor's name.
You just like put your finger over his like upper lip to see if it was him.
Put the moustache on. It's like, oh yeah, that's him. Yeah. Spitting is the hot thing in TV in 2021. We talked about the spitting in Ted Lasso this season, and there was a scene early on in the season. It was actually when Kendall played Rate Me by Nirvana when Shiv was doing that fucking...
Oh my God.
Like town meeting sort of thing inside Waystar Royco. And then she goes up to Kendall's office and finds all the boxes with the boom boxes would have been in, and is just looking through one of his diaries with venom I've never seen. This is like the spitefulness and shit I've never seen before. And she just spits into it. It was just a side of Shiv, the real like dark underbelly of Shiv that doesn't bubble up so obviously really was there. And I couldn't blame her. That was a fucking shit. I mean, Kendall did a lot of shit moves, but that was one of the worst ones, I think.
Yeah.
Least favorite and favorite episode. What was your least favorite episode, Damask?
I don't have one.
You know what? I don't like that shit, but I'm going to say I don't have one either. I was looking, and anything I come up with, it's a shitty excuse. None of them, I have no compelling reason to say any of them were bad. None of them.
Yeah.
None of them. I can't think of a weak scene, let alone a weak moment, let alone a weak line in this fucking show. Favorite episode? What's your favorite episode?
I'm not going to say all of them, but my real answer is all of them. I really enjoyed, I think it's episode 5. It's the shareholder meeting, and Logan has that UTI.
Yes.
And everyone is scrambling. Like the tension I felt and the thrill I felt throughout that was really good. I also enjoyed the very funny moments of, I can't remember his name, it's escaping me at the moment, but the guy who has to like talk for ages on the stage. Frank. And
Frank does first, and then he hands it over to one of the other guys. Eventually they get Jerry up there.
Well, no, because the other guy is meant to come up and take over, and then he says to Frank, he's like, no, just keep talking, and poor Frank is left there. And then eventually, Frank does it to Jerry, and Jerry has to get up. That made me laugh a lot. Just watching the kids scrambling and for so much of it, like not being willing to make a decision or being very scared of like what to do when he's clearly severely unwell. We have the great moment of Logan and Tom in the toilet, and there's like a dad. I think Logan calls Tom son, just kind of off the cuff. He's delusional at that point. And then Tom just goes, thanks, dad, or something. And it just sounds so like sad and pathetic, but he's so thrilled. Yeah, I really enjoyed that episode. But like I said, I enjoyed them all so much.
Just thinking about that episode, actually, and the stuff they get to do with Frank and stuff. Because Frank, you think about back to season one, Frank was really important there for a period where Kendall was trying to do the hostile takeover, basically. And Frank was a key player in that. And Frank has been fired and been rehired. And every time Frank puts his hand up, Logan's just like, you're not trusted, Frank. And he's like, yep, cool. I'll sit back down, I guess. I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah.
And so to get to, because he's lost relevance in a lot of ways, but to get to use him in fun ways like that, I think is, again, just part of the genius of the show. Mm-hmm. So my favorite episode was episode 4, Lion in the Meadow. That's the Adrian Brody episode. No, wait. It's episode 6, What It Takes, which is the one with Tom and Greg eating food at the diner and the Tom and Kendall scene. No, wait. It's episode 7, Too Much Party. No, wait. It's episode 8. No, it's actually episode 9. Honestly, you could throw a blanket over all of this season. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, I think it is episode 9. Mm-hmm. And that surprised me because as much as these finales have been great, episode 8 in particular had so many killer moments, including the dick pic scene, including the Shiv and Tom sex stuff, including the Kendall and Logan dinner. Mm-hmm. I was like, that is some dynamite television we just watched.
Yeah.
And then episode 9 just cranked it up to 11. That final, the second half of that episode in particular, just that 30 to 40 minutes from the moment that they realize that Logan's going to sell the company, that scene in the car park, Tom proposing to Greg, and then the final betrayal. It's just perfection. I don't have another word for it.
Yeah.
Perfect. Predictions, hopes, and concerns going into season 4.
I have no concerns.
Zero
at all.
Concerns.
My hope is that it comes out really soon.
I think it's filming in June, so I wouldn't expect it. Maybe if we're lucky, end of the year.
I'm talking about my hopes. Don't them. And my predictions. Have I already done predictions? No.
No.
My predictions are, it's futile to predict what's going to happen in this show. Just sit back and enjoy the ride, everyone. Looking forward to it.
Concerns, utterly zero. Mm-hmm. If I could get season 4 today, I would.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will be there. I cannot wait. I'll be there day one. Top, highest priority of television shows. Predictions. I don't know if I'm smart enough to even try and guess. I think that's futile.
Yeah.
I think the couple of big questions for me are, is there an element for Connor to play here still in this story, right? There's something about him, I think he's the wild card. Mm. There's a trick or an angle or something that's yet to be played with that character. I don't know what it is. But seeing what they've done with Greg and Tom this season, mm-hmm. particularly Tom this season, I feel like there is a role for Connor to play.
I agree with that 100%.
I don't know what it is.
I think wildcard is a really good way to describe him. And the fact is, like, he seems to be like, you know, a seemingly, what's the word I'm looking for?
Irrelevant or?
Yeah, I guess so. A seemingly irrelevant character, which this show doesn't really have. Mm. So then the question is like, yeah, what part is he going to play ultimately in this story? And I'm looking forward to see how that kind of rolls out.
I like the theory that either next season or the season after, if we get 2 more seasons, will be Connor and Willa's wedding. Because we've done 2 weddings so far. Yeah. Oh, that was the other thing. I saw people compare this finale to like HBO just did another Red Wedding. Like, kinda. That's kind of what happened here.
That's true.
I also think I'm waiting for the Rose of it all to come to the fore. Rose being, I believe, the name of Logan's sister. Do you remember last season? Do you remember last season Kendall and or Shiv or someone got Holly Hunter's character to bring up Rose at the thing and it was like a big taboo? You can't talk about it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And then it came up again very briefly when they were talking about, I think like Vanity Fair wanted to have, like Kendall was talking about talking with Vanity Fair or something like that.
Oh, that's right.
And the name Rose got dropped again. And so it was because it was like, it was left there to remind you that this is something that's important to Logan. Mm-hmm. We have no idea what the relevance is yet, what the meaning is. But don't forget that. That thing is still there. Mm-hmm. And so
good
I was
point.
Like,
I have forgotten that.
Yeah. Had to pay attention. I made note of paying attention to that.
Mm.
My prediction, if I have one, is that season 4 will be the last season of Succession.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to do what they do with all prestige amazing dramas, like The Sopranos, Mad Men, Breaking Bad, and even BoJack Horseman. They're going to give it extra episodes and split it into two seasons, two halves, basically. There'll be like 7 episodes, a mid-season
Harry
break.
Harry Potter, Twilight. And then another episode,
right? Yep. This is how you do finales now. You just... It's like we can either do one season or we can do two seasons. Neither seems great. Let's just do both, essentially. Yeah. I wonder whether that's what Succession has in store for us going forward. My final thought is just wake me up in 2023 when this thing is going to be out, probably.
Oh, don't say that. It's too far.
That's my guess. Maybe it's out before the end of the next year, but I wouldn't bet on it. I would rather they take their time, get those extra episodes, do it right. Or maybe we get like 5, 6, 7 episodes at the end of next year and then we know there's going to be like another 5, 6, 7 episodes in the middle of 2023 or something like that. Whatever. Whatever. Do what you got to do. Take your time. I will be there whenever you're ready.
Mm.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, a.k.a. at ShawneeBoyDraws, and our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Heil of Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself, Broderick Gordis, on Twitter at bgordes, B-G-O-R-D-E-S, Damask.
You can find me on Twitter at maskymoo, M-A-S-K-Y-M-O-O.
Next episode, we'll be back to discuss the great season 2. In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Absolutely.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.